divide these rotary files into two parts. Just a simple classification, if I want to tell you, there is something called as non-heat treated and something which are heat treated. We in my earlier days, I used to use 4 to 5 files to shape just one particular canal.
Yeah.
Okay. But today, if you ask me, there are not more than 2 files that I use to shape any particular canal. Yeah. Okay. Irrespective of the curvature, irrespective of the location, irrespective of the arch. So everything happens with just 2 files. Okay. Obturation. What we need to understand here, that the gutta percha that I placed into the canals, now they are slightly infected because I've still not started with my irrigation phase. So before I obturate, it is important that I disinfect them. It is like a magic material.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the capability, you know, and it was great for Dr. Mohammad Torabinajad, who actually introduced this material to dentistry. My endodontics or restorative dentistry should be approached with this biomimetic approach.
Welcome, Dr. Niranjan.
Thank you.
And welcome to the second episode and second part of your episode.
Thank you.
We've covered the restorative dentistry. Let's let's dive into endodontics. And why did you choose endodontics as your master's?
Okay, so there are 2 stories to this. So first story is, why did I get into dentistry? So I still remember I was probably in 9th or so, or maybe in 10th, and I had a toothache. So I went to a dentist and I got it treated, myself treated. So seeing the dentist, I got inspired that, you know, dentistry has so many machinery, equipments and techniques. So I wanted to aspire during those days to become a dentist. So that is how I got into dentistry.
Wow.
Coming to the endo part. During my internship, during my UG days, in internship, I had done one course under a person who I call him like my father, mentor, and there are so many things that he's taught me, Dr. Vivek Hegde. So I did his workshop. At that time, there was practically no better understanding of endo for me. You know, it was just that, you know, one of my friend told me that, you know, there's a nice course happening in Pune. You're also based in Pune. Let's go there, do a vacation also and do a course also. So I landed up doing a course under Dr. Vivek sir. It was a 2-day program, and the second day was conducted by another excellent mentor, Dr. Mohit Keur, in Prosto. So it was a combination of an endo and Prosto course. So when the first time when I saw Dr. Vivek Hegde, I was super inspired by the way he teaches and the way he, you know, simplified all the things. So it was my aspiration that I wanted to learn something from him. So that is how I pursued my post-graduation under Dr. Vivek sir. Wow. So I'm sir's first student. And apart from dentistry, there are so many life skills that he's actually taught me. And he's more like a mentor and, you know, guide to me. He's more like a, I would say he's like my second father. Wow. So that is how I landed up into endodontics. Yeah. So this is how been my journey. And this is how I became an endodontist. Of course, now, today, if you ask me, I'm less of endodontist and more of a conservative dentist.
Yeah.
So my entire focus and my entire practice is not doing endodontics.
Okay, how to avoid,
you know, that is how my interest.
Okay, yeah. So that's a nice start to our episode, like for endodontics, that how not to do an endodontics. Like pulp therapy, like vital pulp therapy. There are a lot of dentists who, like, you know, who take the x-ray and just tell them, okay, this is the RC to the patient. But I feel there is a different way to look at it. Yes, definitely you mention it to them that there is a probability for an RC. But I think there's a whole, you see the scenario as a complete and as a whole.
True.
So how do you advocate vital pulp therapy?
So whenever a patient walks into my dental practice and he does not have any complaint with his tooth, like, you know, we can definitely see a frank cavitation. Clinically, we take an x-ray and we see that, you know, the decay is definitely approaching the pulp. Maybe it has not reached the pulp, or maybe it is just touching the pulp. So we always convince the patient to do a root canal treatment. But as doing excavation, in case if you feel in case if you encounter now there is fresh bleeding happening and there is no necrotic debris, there is no necrotic pulp, you can see fresh vital bleeding, you should definitely attempt and give that tooth one more chance for it to revive.
Okay. So now,
this is where the vital pulp therapy comes into picture. Now, in case if we go into the conventional classification, there was pulpotomy, there was pulpectomy and coronal pulpotomy. There were so many terms and it was differentiated into, you know, many categories, subcategories. But in my day-to-day practice, I want something which is simplified and which it can be repeatable. If I'm doing, anybody else can be doing it. So the protocol that I follow for vital pulp therapy is I do a root canal opening, like we are opening the entire pulp chamber. Yeah. Okay, moment I open the pulp chamber, the entire nerves and whatever pressure is there, it becomes depressurized. And the if there is some kind of mild preoperative pain, that is getting relieved. Okay, once this has been done, okay, the most important step in vital pulp therapy is disinfecting that pulp which is there in the coronal chamber. Okay, the pulp which is there, there is a possibility it may have some kind of bacteria only in the coronal part. Okay. The canals, the root canals are absolutely fine. There are no bacteria in the canals, but there is a possibility that the coronal pulp chamber might have some remaining bacteria. So to disinfect that has to be done with a proper standardized 5% sodium hypochlorite. So it is important that we place a cotton pellet which has been dipped with sodium hypochlorite. We place it in the pulp chamber. We leave it for 5 minutes. Okay. Now this is a position statement that has been given by the Indian Endodontic Society. That once we have placed this cotton pellet which has been dipped in hypochlorite, after 5 minutes when we remove the cotton pellet, there should be no active bleeding seen.
Okay.
Suppose if I still see active bleeding, mm-hmm. I do one more round of this sodium hypochlorite. And even after two rounds of sodium hypochlorite, if there is still active bleeding continuing, it is important that we proceed with the endodontic treatment. Suppose if there is no active bleeding seen and the bleeding has completely arrested, we are going to place MTA over that and we are going to complete our direct or indirect restorations. So this is how you do vital pulp therapy. Another important point here, Dr. Jaisal, what I want to highlight, that this has to be done under strict isolation. Because once the pulp chamber has been opened, I don't want any salivary contaminants to infect the pulp. Okay. And cause some kind of new infection that is happening. So all of this is definitely possible if you do strict rubber dam isolation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as you said that doing pulpectomy, for me as a dentist, I had heard these terms only for the pedo patients.
Yeah.
Like they have never been spoken about for an adult patient. So is it still common to do pulpotomy in adult patients currently?
Yeah, so this vital pulp therapy, definitely it works great in younger patients, okay. Pediatric patient or who's a teenager, it definitely works wonders. But there are so many cases where I have attempted a vital pulp therapy in adult patients also, because the pulp has still some regenerative capability and it can still revive and we can still save an endodontic treatment of a particular tooth. Okay, so it is our due right that we should give one more chance for the pulp to revive. See, it is not that each and every case that walks into my practice, the answer to it is an endodontic treatment. That should not be the approach. We should definitely save, and that is how you, you know, take care of the integrity of the tooth.
Agreed. So this is where how not to do an endodontics. This is possible with a caries, there are obviously case selection that happens
true,
for this
true.
Thing. If we get into endodontics, the first thing that is the extent of the caries, and the first step that we start is access opening. But do you suggest that, you know, it should be done in a reverse manner? Like we should down plan whenever we do endodontics, like starting from, can we give a crown to it? Is it really salvageable or not? So what is your approach to it?
Yeah, Dr. Jaisal, that's a very excellent question that you have asked. So I still remember my 3 years of my PG time. Okay, in those PG days, we attended so many seminars and so many conferences and textbooks. All of those conferences were mainly focused on how to shape a canal, how to do proper irrigation, how to do 3D obturation and all this stuff. But practically, there were very few lectures who were actually telling us the right way of approaching the coronal part of the tooth. So that means the crown part of the tooth.
Yes.
Okay. So today when I have a case, my first thing that I see there is not how to shape that particular canal. Is there a canal curvature? Is there a dye laceration? All these things are secondary to me. The first thing is that the coronal part of the tooth structure, that is the crown of the tooth, how best possible manner I can save it in as conservative way as possible is my approach. So when I'm doing a caries excavation, I'm seeing to that I'm not too aggressive and not doing over extensive root canal openings. Like, you know, let's take an example. In my earlier days, when I was not well versed with my endodontic practice, I used to honestly over enlarge my access cavities just in search for that single canal. Okay, but today I know that, you know, with the heat treated files, the flexibility of file is great. So I don't need unnecessary over enlargement of the canals of the pulp chamber. So the access cavities today are becoming more and more conservative. So it is important that after doing your endodontic treatment, how are you going to rehabilitate that tooth should be the first approach when a patient walks into your office.
Agreed. And I think your magnification also plays a role where even with your basic loops, if you're using that, you can reach to the canal and you don't require to cut the dentine, like the extra dentine that you are cutting, because the more you preserve, the better it is.
Yeah.
So when you are excavating the caries, as you said that, like, you know, it is all done under rubber dam. So when you're excavating the caries, do you really get into the shape of it, or are you really thinking, like, you know, what are the points that you think while you are excavating the caries? Like things that I should think about.
So let me break this into two parts. Like the first part you are mentioning about magnification. So let's take one clinical scenario where I'm not able to locate a particular canal. Okay. Suppose if I'm trying to, trying to achieve and trying to locate that canal without magnification, then there is a possibility I may overextend my access preparation and I may cut unnecessary amount of tooth structure which is not decayed. Okay. And moment I cut some amount of tooth structure, automatically the strength and the integrity of the tooth is getting decreased. Okay. Unknowingly it is happening. Okay. But on the contrary, if I'm using some kind of magnification, okay, maybe a loops or even microscope, then there is a possibility that even without extending my access cavity, I'll be able to locate the canal.
Definitely.
So this is what magnification plays a very important role in many aspects of dentistry. Coming to the second part, I still come across so many cases and so many cases, like my 50% practice is referral practice, where some of the other case is referred for endo or conservative or restorative purpose. The first thing that I see is caries removal is not done, but the rest of the steps have started. See, caries is like a double-edged sword. It is good to us and it is bad for us also. It is good to us because our homes run, you know, on that. But in case if I don't take care of that caries in a proper manner, then there is a possibility that my entire treatment may go wrong. I still remember this episode from last 15 days. So this case was referred to us. The case was already treated by an endodontist second time, and the pain was just not going. Okay. And so the endodontist again removed the filling, the gutta percha, everything. And now the case was referred to me. And the first thing that I saw in the X-ray was that pre-endodontic fillings were not done and decay was still remaining.
Okay.
So the first thing before even looking inside the canals and even negotiating, the first thing that I did was doing a pre-endodontic filling.
Okay.
And later on, then I accessed the canals. Later on, I did my irrigation and then the pain eventually subsided.
Okay.
So removal of decay is a very primary important step that each and everyone has to be done.
Okay.
And then the rest of the steps follow.
Okay. So to do a pre-endodontic buildup, do you think that when you start excavating the caries, you have reached the pulp, you navigate all the canals and then do the pre-endodontic buildup? And do you really think about even immediate dental sealing at this point where it's like the correct stage to, because as it is, you're opening up the dentine and then you seal it at that point and then go ahead with the endodontics?
Correct. So now, Dr. Jaisal, there are two things to it. So once I have done my complete caries excavation, whether I have a complete pulp chamber opening or there is only a pulp horn opening. suppose it is a pulp horn opening, okay, then practically I don't need any kind of barrier to do my pre-endodontic filling, because in case if I, you know, put my core material, my flowable composite or packable composite, we have a fear that that composite is going to block the root canal orifices, okay? So that does not happen when only a pulp horn is open. But suppose after doing caries excavation, if the entire pulp chamber has opened, then there is a possibility my root canal orifices can get blocked with my bonding agent or maybe with my flowable composite that we are going to use. So in those kind of cases, it is important that I pack some amount of Teflon. Okay, so it acts like a barrier. So when I do my pre-endodontic restoration, it is not going to block those orifices. And another important point here, Dr. Jaisal, is that the pre-endodontic filling material should be the same material what is going to be your post-endodontic filling.
Okay.
Yeah, because I want a proper fluid tight seal.
True.
I don't want anything that is leaking from and having some micro leakage.
True, yeah. True.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you prefer doing the core buildup with the core buildup materials that are available, or a normal composite is fine, so that even before starting the root canals, we can do with the same material?
Yeah, so definitely the core materials are advocated for doing our post-endodontic filling.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the same material has to be used for our pre-endodontic fillings also. Okay, because they have good strength. Because there is a possibility that in some particular cases, I need to place some intracanal medicament, which is going to stay for a month or so, because I want to, you know, judge the amount of periapical healing that is happening. And in that 1 month, we can't ask the patient that you're not going to chew from that side.
Yeah.
Because it will be very cruel to the patient that not using one side. And if it is his dominant side, he has to chew from there. So it is important that the strength of the pre-endodontic filling is also good. And I don't want any, easy materials like GSE or zinc oxide eugenol. All these materials should not be used for your pre-endodontic filling. So it has to be 100% core composite filling. Okay.
Wow. Yeah. Going ahead to the cleaning and shaping of the canals.
Yeah.
I mean, there is such a plethora of files and everything, and there is so many things. So how would you simplify that for an endodontic approach, and like what are the materials that you would simplify it to, like what are the basic things that each and every dentist should have for the cleaning and shaping?
So if I were to divide these rotary files into two parts, just a simple classification, if I want to tell you, there is something called as non-heat treated and something which are heat treated. Now the non-heat treated files are our conventional files. So in case if I take an endodontic file and if I bend it with my hand, it is going to bounce back to its original shape what it was. So these were the non-heat treated files. But today if I take a heat treated file and if I bend it, it stays in that bent form. Okay, unless some amount of heat is applied to it. Okay, so this heat can be autoclave heat.
Okay,
or it can be the body heat also.
Okay.
Okay. So due to that also the file can, straighten into inside the canal also.
Okay.
So now the heat treated files have more better flexibility as compared to the non-heat treated one.
Okay.
So as a beginner and as a general practitioner, it is important that you invest in heat treated files now.
Okay.
Because they have more better flexibility and they don't break as compared to the non-heat treated ones.
Okay.
Of course, everything breaks. Okay.
Yeah.
Aisa nahi hai ki, they are not going to break everything, but they have more better, I would say, the number of times that is used.
Yeah.
We can use those more as compared to the non-heat treated ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is the simplest classification that I can give it to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going to the next step of cleaning and shaping, there are a lot of techniques that were taught to us during the school.
Yeah.
So what are the advancements that have come up in cleaning and shaping currently that are going on in dentistry?
Yeah, I would say in my earlier days, I used to use 4 to 5 files to shape just one particular canal.
Yeah.
Okay. But today, if you ask me, there are not more than 2 files that I use to shape any particular canal. Okay. Irrespective of the curvature, irrespective of the location, irrespective of the arch. So everything happens with just 2 files. Okay. If there is some one odd case which requires, if it is too larger, then maybe in that one particular canal, I may use a 3rd file. Okay. But if you ask me, 90% of my work is done with only 2 file shaping. Okay. Coming to the approach, definitely the crown down is still the best, and it is time tested, and each and every one, any beginner who is there, he should definitely start with the crown down approach only, where he is enlarging the coronal, middle third, and then the apical, because that, you know, practically eliminates all the resistance that the file gets while during the apical shaping. So crown down is the best approach that any one can do.
Yeah. Would you say that the apical shaping is the most important part in the cleaning and shaping? Because maximum of the files that break, the percentage wise, if you go to see, it's during the apical shaping.
So I would definitely reserve this question to non-heat treated files.
Okay. Yeah.
So if I was using a non-heat treated file, and if in the apical third, I have a hockey stick curvature, then I would be a bit skeptical to, you know, and I may have a fear that the file may break. But this is not the case today with heat treated files. So when it comes to heat treated files, the flexibility is so amazing that it practically does not break. One important thing here is to create a very good glide path. Unless there is a proper glide path, and unless the file smoothly passes till the apical third, one should not enter the canal with any rotary file. Okay. Yeah, so glide path preparation plays a very important role, especially with the apical third curvatures.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And what is like a normal set for you, like a normal endo box? Like, what are the amount of K files you should have? What are the amount of rotary files you should have? And what are the other files that you should have in your endo box?
Yeah, so my endo box, which is there, consists of a 10 number file, a 15 number file, a glide path file, and my two shaping files. That's it. That is the only, these are the only files that is there in my endo box. So like I mentioned earlier, I used to have many files to shape one canal, but now that has been simplified. So in earlier days, what used to happen is that so many files are needed to shape a particular canal, like in a maxillary molar, in case if I find an MB2 or maybe additionally a DB2 or maybe a second parietal canal, then imagine the time that I'm spending with the 4 or 5 rotary files to shape these 6 canals. And so we used to get exhausted by shaping so many canals, and the time that was dedicated or that is devoted to irrigation was less. Okay. Now it is the reverse. Now the shaping is more faster, and more amount of time is dedicated and devoted to irrigation.
Okay.
Which is a real game changer in endodontics.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you suggest that in even normal root canals, the amount of time that you give to irrigation comparatively should be much higher than the cleaning and shaping?
Yeah, Dr. Jaisal, so you know, the primary objective of any shaping is that it has to create some space so that the hypochlorite reaches the apical third. See, in endodontics, all the circus is happening in the apical third. It is all about that. You know, practically, you're not bothered that the bacteria from the coronal third and the middle third, they are out or not. For me, what is important that the apical third bacteria should be completely eliminated. So for that, the real hero, okay, the sodium hypochlorite should actually reach my apical third. And it should, you know, act properly. It should clean all the dentinal tubules, whatever bacteria is there, it should get completely eliminated. So that is my primary goal. So therefore, the primary objective of shaping is to take the irrigant there.
Okay.
That is
okay.
How. Yeah.
The irrigation protocol, let's talk about that, and usage of ultrasonics in irrigation protocol.
Okay. So when it comes to irrigation in the endodontic field, there is a lot of controversy, okay, on the type of irrigation that is used, the materials that are used, and there is a lot of controversy happening. So first and foremost, while doing shaping, okay, a particular canal in the pulp chamber, it is important that we do wet shaping. So there should be some amount of irrigation, that is my sodium hypochlorite, which is there in the pulp chamber through which I am doing shaping of the canal. Okay, so this is there while shaping. Once my shaping is completed, I start with my irrigation phase. Okay, so irrigation phase is completely different, and one should devote sufficient time for irrigation. Now in irrigation, what we need to understand that while we have done shaping, there is some amount of smear layer that is going to be sticking to the dentinal walls. Okay, now suppose if I start with my sodium hypochlorite activated irrigation, due to smear layer that is there on the dentinal walls, those tubules are occluded. So that is the reason why opening these dentinal tubules is the first step that has to be done. So the first step of irrigation phase starts by using either my liquid EDTA or my citric acid, either of the two. In case if I'm using liquid EDTA, I need to activate that for 1 minute per canal. Citric acid is slightly stronger and you can use it for maximum 30 seconds per canal. Okay. So once I have used my liquid EDTA or citric acid, it has to be thoroughly washed with our normal saline. Okay. Once I have thoroughly irrigated the canals with normal saline to remove all these remnants of liquid EDTA and citric acid, the second irrigant that comes into picture is my 5% concentrated hypochlorite. Now, it is important that we do not dilute it. Okay. It is important that it has to be in a concentrated manner so that it gives maximum efficacy. It can either be 3%, it can be either 5%. Any one of them is okay. So again, this has to be activated for 30 seconds per canal. Okay. So 30 seconds each and every canal has to be activated. Okay, and once my sodium hypochlorite phase has been completed, I wash it with normal saline, and then comes the next part of two options. Either I can use my my chlorhexidine, my 2% chlorhexidine to do as my final rinsing, or maybe you can directly proceed to your obturation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is how the irrigation protocol is there in endodontics.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful. So next we go to our 3D obturation, which is like an advanced thing currently going on.
Yeah.
3D obturation and techniques that are there in the obturation part.
Yeah.
So let's discuss that.
So Dr. Jaisal, you know, the main benefit and I would say main primary objective, if you actually go through the textbooks, Cohen, Engel, whatever the basic textbook of endodontics that are available, one important objective of obturation, and there is a clear cut line written in that, entombing of all microorganisms. Okay, that means during my irrigation phase, if some amount of bacteria are remaining behind, okay, so my irrigation protocol was not that effective and some bacteria are left behind, then they should be entombed. That means they are devoid of any nutrients and then eventually they die on their own. Okay, because all the nutrients that they were getting was from the pulp. Yeah. Okay, so now we have shaped the canals and now we are going to fill it completely and we are going to occlude those dentinal tables. So those entombing of bacteria is one major objective of any obturating material. So this is where 3D obturation is one step higher as compared to our lateral condensations. Yeah. So when we are doing lateral condensation, even if we are placing accessory cone, there is a possibility in some areas, there may be some, you know, open spot or void that has been left behind where the sealer is not there and where the gutta percha is not there. And in the same area, if there's some bacteria remaining behind, if it is viable, vital, it can cause reinfection and then we'll see, you know, some reinfection at a later stage. So when we are doing 3D obturation, we get complete sealing of all the root canal lumen that we have shaped. Okay. And practically there is no, or I would say very minimal space remaining behind. So 3D obturation is definitely which one each and every person should invest.
Wow. And what is the role of the material that we use, the gutta percha that we use? Should it be maybe sanitized first or maybe disinfected first? And what is the role of the sealers that we use in the obturation? Like, how does that help in getting a better sealing done?
Okay. So, Dr. Jaisal, let me go back to what we have spoken earlier. So, in my earlier section, I spoke that while doing shaping of a canal, there should be sodium hypochlorite.
Yeah.
Okay. And once we have shaped the canal, then we start with the irrigation phase. Yeah. In between these two phases, there is one step of master cone checking. Okay, so how do I verify that whether my shaping that I've done is complete or not? Okay, so we place gutta percha cones into the canals. We take a radiograph and we verify that my gutta percha cone has gone till that particular working length that was necessary. Okay, once I have verified that, I'm going to remove those gutta percha, going to keep them aside, and then I start with my irrigation phase. Okay, so before obturation, what we need to understand here that the gutta percha that I placed into the canals, now they are slightly infected because I've still not started with my irrigation phase. So before I obturate, it is important that I disinfect them in my sodium hypochlorite. Okay, so I'm going to place them in my sodium hypochlorite for 1 minute. I'm going to remove them. Then I'm going to wash it into my normal saline or distilled water. And then I go ahead and I obturate.
Okay, yeah, okay.
That is how it is.
Okay. Let's talk about the sealers that are newer in market. The bioceramic sealers, which are currently, like, you know, lot to talk about them. And are currently the hot topic, maybe, I would say, in endodontics.
Yeah. So bioceramic sealers, the main disadvantage, I would say, if you ask me about the gutta percha, is that it does not have healing capability. That healing capability is coming indirectly because we have shaped the canals, we have done irrigation, and eventually the lesion heals. But as such, the material that we are placing inside the body, that itself does not have any healing capability. This is where the silicate materials, calcium silicate materials, are one step higher. Okay, so these calcium silicate materials is like a generic term, but if you want to simplify them further, they are either MTA, they are biodentine, or maybe are bioceramic sealers. Okay, so these bioceramic, any calcium silicate material, so whether it is MTA, biodentine, or the bioceramic sealers, they have an added advantage of that healing capability. Okay, because they can regenerate bone, they can regenerate cementum, they can regenerate anything. Okay. Another factor that why these bioceramic sealers were introduced is because in 3D obturation, we need to practically compact gutta percha into the root canals. Okay, and let's take an example. If the dentinal walls are very thin, then while I'm compacting the gutta percha with my plugger, there is a possibility I may exert more amount of pressure with my hand. And there may be some crack initiation. Maybe the tooth won't crack through and through. But there might be some initiation of that crack that is happening on a particular dentinal wall. And over a period of time, when the patient chews on the tooth, in the long-term scenario, the tooth may full-fledged break. So this is where the bioceramic sealers come into place, where there is no 3D obturation happening. So this is all single-coil obturation with bioceramic sealers. But it comes at a cost, that they are expensive. So if I'm comparing the material cost of a 3D obturation versus bioceramic sealer, bioceramic are definitely more expensive as compared to my 3D obturation. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so among the three calcium silicate material, MTA, biodentine, and the bioceramic sealer, MTA is a time-tested material. I would say in endodontics, it is like a magic material.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the capabilities that MTA has is phenomenal. Okay. You know, and it was great for Dr. Mohammad Torabin Ajad, who actually introduced this material to dentistry. And so there are many cases where instead of using a gutta percha with bioceramic sealers, you can practically obturate those canals with MTA by doing an MTA apexification, where 4 to 5 millimeters of the apical third is filled with MTA and rest of the canal is filled with gutta percha. So by doing this, you have best of both the worlds. With MTA, we have that additional healing capability.
Mm-hmm.
And gutta percha gives us ease of use.
Wow.
Yeah, that is how these new materials have come in.
Okay. So biodentine that you, as you mentioned, like biodentine and MTA, how to weigh, like where to invest and where to use when, what material?
So Dr. Jaisal, when it comes to biodentine, there is one major drawback of biodentine where I practically am not too convinced to use it, and that is radio opacity. So it is practically not seen on the X-ray. Okay, so let's take an example. I want to do a MTA apexification for an open apex case. Okay, and I have taken a small amount of biodentine. I'm carrying it into the canal and I'm pushing it. So, and this is a time when I'm going to take an X-ray and I'm going to verify whether it has reached till the apical third or not. If it is MTA, it is clearly seen. I know whether it is in the middle third, junction of middle and apical third, or whether it has gone beyond apex. With biodentine, it is practically invisible.
Okay.
So this is the only major thing why I'm, you know, very restricted with the use of biodentine.
Okay.
Otherwise, biodentine is also an excellent material. It has all the regenerative capabilities.
Okay.
And there is no harm in using biodentine.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I think cost-wise, it's better, like the cost-effective is MT or they both...
Cost-effective is definitely MT, I would say, as compared to biodentine.
Yeah.
But the cost for biodentine is not substantially high.
Okay.
So it is very much viable.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Going ahead from the obturation to the next part, one topic that was discussed majorly beforehand and one is like not talked about a lot currently in dentistry is post and core.
Okay.
I personally feel that the restorative dentistry is going on a such a huge scale that the Poston core is not seen a lot nowadays. What do you have, like what is your suggestion in this?
Yeah, so a major concept that has introduced not only to endodontics but also to restorative dentistry is this biomimetic approach. Yes. Okay, so when it comes to a biomimetic approach, it is important that I don't cut unnecessary amount of tooth structure. Okay, so let's take an example that I'm a newcomer. I have just recently passed out and I have a case that comes into my practice and it is a normal first molar. It has pulp stones. Okay, it has very thin canals and I start with my root canal treatment. There is a MOD cavity also, so DK is there from the mesial side, distal side, and some amount of, there is a class 5 also. So much amount of caries is already, you know, taking up the tooth structure. On top of that, since I'm a newcomer, I'm not able to remove that pulp stone and I take my aerator drill and I drill everywhere and I over enlarge my access preparation. Okay. With some luck, I'm able to locate the canals. I go ahead and I start shaping of the canals. Now, if I'm using my earlier conventional rotary files, which had taper of more than 6%, then I'm practically over enlarging and removing more amount of dentine. Okay. So this is where more amount of tooth structure is happening. And then once everything has been completed, I come to it makes me realize that now I need a Poston core in this case. Then again, to place a Poston core, I'm removing some amount of tooth structure. So this biomimetic approach is literally thrown out of a window in this case. So it is important that each and every case, whether it is my endodontics or restorative dentistry, should be approached with this biomimetic approach. So your access preparation should be as less as possible. Then your canal shaping should be as minimal as possible. And once we have finished our endodontic filling, okay, we have to restore that in the most conservative manner as possible. Now, when it comes to Poston core, okay, I would say Poston core is exactly reverse of biomimetic approach, because to place a post inside the canal, I again have to remove some amount of tooth structure. Yeah. So it definitely does not go in synergy with the biomimetic approach. So since last 4 to 5 years, I still can't remember when I have placed a post. So what is important here is to do sandblasting and to use rubber dam to achieve that proper, I would say, chemical bonding of your core material to the root canal dentine.
Okay. The bio base that
bio base that is there. So once you have achieved this particular concept, there is no way that your core material is going to dislodge.
Agreed.
Because the sole significance of placing a post inside the canal is that it is the retention of the core.
Yeah.
It is no way strengthening the amount of tooth. So the retention of the core can be achieved by more better things which are available in our day-to-day practice.
Okay.
So we don't need to remove some amount of tooth structure from the dentine to achieve that retention of the core.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for me, Poston core is not a biomimetic way of, you know, approaching with a particular thing.
After so much of advancements, I would say there might be certain cases which may require Poston core. Which one would you suggest, like which post to go ahead with?
Okay.
Because there are two types, metal, there are certain titanium posts also, and there is a fiber post, which one to go ahead for?
Okay, so let's take an example that a particular case definitely needs a Poston core. Okay, and so one thing what we need to understand here, if I'm comparing a metal post to any fiber post, okay, I want a chemical bonding to happen. Okay, that chemical bonding can only be achieved when I'm using fiber post. Okay, or maybe glass fiber, or maybe by doing a bio base, and there are many approaches to doing that. So fiber post definitely has an upper hand as compared to my metallic ones, because once the patient starts chewing and when the tooth flexes under occlusion, my metallic posts are not going to flex, and eventually there is a possibility I may land up with a root fractures. So the fiber posts which are there, they definitely have an upper hand of achieving chemical bonding. Another important aspect here is that when we were doing those cast post and metallic post, we need to go more inside the root canal to achieve the retention of that metallic post. Okay, so I had to take my post space till the junction of middle third and apical third. That much inside I had to go in a root canal to place that particular post. So that my metallic post, whether it is my cast or maybe it is a prefabricated, would, you know, achieve proper retention. But this is not now the case with fiber post. Fiber post, practically, even if I create a post space only in the coronal third, due to chemical bonding and micromechanical retention, the post is going to stay in place.
Okay.
So I don't need to go so much inside the canal. Okay. Because more inside the root canal we go, more complexity increases. So this is where fiber posts definitely have an upper hand.
Okay. So going ahead from here, like in diagnosis, whenever we are supposedly there is a MB2, like the canals which are like, you know, available. In complex cases,
yeah.
What do you think that CBCT should be like, you know, asked to get it done in all the cases or only those complex cases, and how to diagnose that it's a complex tooth, like, you know, and how to see that the complexity of the tooth is there beforehand, before even starting the root canal.
True. So I would say here that in endodontics, there is a lot of overuse of CBCT, honestly, in my, this is what I think. Because, you know, many things in endodontics can actually be diagnosed by, you know, some clinical methods which are time tested since many, many years. Like, you know, for example, let's take an example of a root canal treated tooth. He has a draining sinus and we need to diagnose whether it has a vertical fracture or whether I should proceed with a retreatment. Now, in our endodontic literature, it has already been proven that clinical attachment loss in that particular localized area is a best indicator that you can have whether it is a root fracture or not. Because in case if I'm subjecting an endodontically treated tooth for CBCT, the image is literally going to be super blurred. Because gutta percha, crown, post, all of these scatter radiation. And I'm not going to get a crisp image for me to achieve a proper diagnosis. Okay. So practically it is a waste of patient's money. Okay. So many, so in 1 year, practically I don't send even 3 patients for CBCT evaluation for endo. Okay. So all of them can be managed by simple clinical skills. Okay. So if the sinus is involving the marginal gingiva, and if we see a localized attachment loss, that is a sure shot case of a vertical fracture. And in on the radiograph, we see a J-shaped lesion. Just go ahead and extract the tooth. There's no need to even take a CBCT. One more clinical indicator is that when a patient has a sinus from the buccal and the lingual side both. Okay. That is a clear cut case of a vertical fracture. No need to even take a CBCT. Just go ahead and extract the tooth. So a lot of, you know, there are clinical diagnostic methods which have already been time tested, proven. They have been given in our endodontic literature.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those have to be well versed, studied. And they have to be implemented.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And what do you think about guided endodontics? That, like, you know, it's like a lot of this advancement that is coming up, which is guided endodontics. Like, what are your views on that?
Yeah, so this new technology which is there, I would say it is still in a native stage. It is still in a baby stages. But it is a very promising technology. So when we have a complex case, okay, and I need to approach a particular root canal in one particular direction, how do I know that which is the right direction to approach that root canal? So this is where guided endodontics is going to play a major role. Okay, so it has a combination of a CBCT DICOM file, and there is a, you know, I would say a satellite tracer who can actually, you know, tell us that this is the direction, and it gives you a real time video or imaging that the direction which you are entering the canal, whether it is right or not. So it is still in initial primary stages, but yeah, in near future, in near timeline, we'll definitely see promising things happening with the guided thing happening.
Okay. I would just like to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
You said that you give medicaments in certain cases, like for a month.
Yeah.
What are those medicaments? And like, along with that, there is one topic that we need to discuss is use of antibiotics in endodontic cases.
Okay. So coming to medicaments, Dr. Jaisal, now let's take an example that we have a periapical lesion with a particular case. And we know that we need to place a medicament for the periapical lesion to heal because we don't have rotary files for periapical lesions.
Yes.
Okay. We have to wait for the healing to happen. Now, the best method to study a periapical healing is CBCT. But I can't take CBCT every 15 days just to check that whether the volumetric healing is happening or not. So we have to rely on our radiographs. Okay, so I'm going to repeat the radiographs after 15 days, after 30 days, and we are going to compare the preoperative and the x-ray which is there after a month later or maybe 2 months. So it is just for that time period for me to get convinced that now the healing has started, I can go ahead and obturate the case. Now, no need to wait for the complete periapical healing to happen and then go ahead and obturate the case. Moment you come to know that I can see the radiographic changes in a positive way, go ahead and obturate the case and finish the case. So that timeline is very subjective. For some patient, it can be 15 days. For some patient, it can be months. So it all depends on the size of the lesion. So that is the reason why this extended time period is there with calcium hydroxide. But one important thing, Jaisal, that I want to highlight here is that moment we place calcium hydroxide for extended period of time, there is one drawback of calcium hydroxide is weakening of dentine. Okay, so that is the reason why for me it is important that the calcium hydroxide comes out as fast as possible. So a recall every 15 days is very critical. Okay, so and you want to get rid of calcium hydroxide and go ahead and obturate that case. Coming to antibiotics, again, I would say it in India, the use of antibiotics is like an abuse. Yeah, in dentistry. Yeah. So, you know, instead of relying and doing the basic necessary steps of endodontics, like, you know, doing a pre-endodontic filling, giving calcium hydroxide, doing activated irrigation, all these things are more important rather than relying on systemic antibiotics. Since last 14 years, not a single patient I've given antibiotics.
Okay.
Everything has been, you know, whatever the size of the lesion is, everything is healed by doing proper basic endodontic treatment. Even so the moment we skip the steps, this is where problem starts.
Even the pus training.
Everything happens by doing non-antibiotic dentistry. I'm very proud to say this, that none of the medical representative of any pharma company comes to my dental clinic.
Wow.
Because they know Dr. Vatkar does not give antibiotics. This is how the case is.
Wow. I think this is actually one of the topics for another podcast.
Yes.
The whole podcast can go. Because I feel that the use of antibiotics, at least in root canal cases, should be avoided as much as possible.
Yes,
because it's on your skill. Don't be lazy to do the treatment and for the recall of the patient.
True. Very true.
So unless and until the patient is visiting you for short period of time and patient is traveling, that's a different case scenario. But don't be lazy as a dentist.
Exactly. To skip the steps and, you know, honestly.
Yes.
Very
yes,
rightly said. Dr.
Yes,
Jaisal.
Yes. Perfect. Going ahead from here, there's a small topic which I want to discuss, which is not lots, like, you know, I've not heard as a general dentist, is regenerative dentistry, regenerative endodontics. Because pulp, I feel, may be a very small part of blood supply, nerve supply, but it is a very important part.
Yeah.
And we should get into regenerative of that thing, and especially in pedo cases. Because if you start, see, any dental treatment, I feel, is a solution for next 10 years, 15 years. But each and every time you treat the tooth, you're doing more and more harm to that thing.
True, exactly.
So then regenerative should help and push that years to more 10 to 15 years.
Exactly.
Yeah, so let's talk about regenerative dentistry.
So let's take an example of a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Okay, he or she has a decay with a first molar. Can you imagine? The first molar is so important tooth in our mouth. It is the primary chewing mechanism on which we break the food.
The most abused one.
Exactly. And at in the initial years, the roots are not developed. Okay, they are practically open. And suppose if I go ahead and I do an endodontic treatment, and if I botch up the case, okay, like if I do some perforation, or maybe I don't obturate the canal well, or I do unnecessarily over enlargement of the canal, imagine that kid, how much he's going to suffer for his entire lifetime. Okay, with the the tooth breaks, then he needs postum core, then retreatment and all this stuff. So he's encountering failure at each and every stage. So this is where interception plays a very important role. So the tooth cycle, which is there, that we have read in a lot of magazines, literature, textbooks, it is important that we intercept a disease at that particular stage in a proper and a right and a conservative manner. So this is where regenerative endodontics come into picture. Okay, now when it comes to regenerative endodontics, calcium hydroxide is not the material. Okay, so this is where the triple antibiotic paste or the double antibiotic paste, they come into picture to heal the periapical lesion. Okay, so definitely the infected pulp has to be removed. An antibiotic paste has to be placed inside the canal once the patient is comfortable. Then we go ahead and we do tooth regeneration or the pulp regeneration, where an MTA plug is placed and we allow the root apex formation to form. Okay, now there are two advantages of this. Of course, if I take a vitality tester and if I do vitality testing of the tooth, maybe I may have a negative response or maybe I may have a false response. Mm-hmm. Okay, because the coronal pulp is not there here.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But that does not mean that the tooth is non-vital. Maybe you can say there is it is still partially vital. Okay, the two advantages that we are achieving out of it is that when the pulp is slightly vital, there is some possibility that it may revive to some extent what it was in its original form. The second advantage, what I feel, is more of a clinical advantage. Once the root apex is formed, tomorrow if I again need an endodontic treatment for that particular tooth, now it will be more easier to treat, because if I'm comparing a shaping of an open apex canal versus a matured matured apex, yes, the matured one is more easier to treat, more easier to obturate. Yes. So it will be like a win-win situation for the patient also and for us also at a later date. But being conservative and doing the right approach and, understanding, because if it is our own family member, we try to do it in the best possible manner as we can. Our patients also deserve the same.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Coming to the post-endodontic restoration. So as we started from that, we should down-plan the endodontics.
True.
But is it really needed to do a post-endodontic restoration on all the cases? Because this is the talk of the endodontic, this thing currently, that not all the teeth that are treated for RCs or treated for root canals should be restored prosthetically. Like, what is your opinion on that?
Yeah, so there are many cases, Dr. Jaisal, where we do a caries-directed access. So let's take an example. If the decay is very localized, you know, it is just in the mesial part, it is not even across the middle third of the tooth, the caries destruction is not much, and that particular needs a root canal, then we are just going to do the root canal. We are going to just excavate the decay, open the pulp chamber only in that localized area. We complete the shaping, obturation, everything, and we restore that only with a direct composite restoration. Not even a partial onlay, not even an overlay, nothing over that. Okay. Suppose now when it comes to these post-endodontic restoration, new advancement and research that has said that incorporation of fibers into the post-endodontic restoration definitely plays a very positive role. Okay, so research, there's a long research that has happened earlier also, that moment we de-roof the pulp chamber, the strength of the tooth decreases, there is more stress concentration in the CEJ. Okay, so to overcome and to reduce the stress and to increase the stress distribution, in case if you're introducing fibers in your post-endodontic restoration, then definitely that is going to help you in increasing the integrity in long term. Okay, so those fibers can be either the loose fibers which are available, I don't want to name any companies,
okay,
or maybe they can be fibers which are there already in a composite material.
Okay? As a filler.
As a filler. Yeah. So both the options can be used, but some kind of fiber introduction in your post-endodontic filling,
mm-hmm,
will definitely play a more positive role as compared to doing the core in a conventional manner.
What is your suggestion to a general practitioner or people who want to do endodontics as their, you want to upgrade their endodontics, like any 5 points that you would want to tell from your end?
Yeah, so the first major thing is application of rubber dam. That definitely plays a very important role, because see, once the rubber dam is in place, your entire focus is only on that one particular tooth. Let's take an example of a mandibular right 7, which needs an endodontic treatment. A very simple case. It is just a class 1 cavity, but the patient is has a very heavy salivary flow. Okay, all your energy is spent on changing cotton rolls, and all the energy of the assistant is spent in retracting the tongue. Okay, but moment a rubber dam is in place, your entire focus is just on that one particular tooth.
Yeah.
Because moment, you know, I'm spending a lot of energy on unnecessary things, there is a possibility I may encounter with some kind of incidents. My file may break or I may land up with a perforation. So many things can happen. So your attention should not get diverted. So this is where RubberDam comes into picture. Next important thing is magnification. Yeah, when you have loops, when you have microscope, there is no scope that you may go wrong anywhere. So whatever extra canals are there, whatever missed canals are there, everything can be located. And it automatically upgrades your skill. Okay, next important thing is please be conservative even in your shaping. Okay, so don't unnecessarily cut the canals. Okay, so don't over enlarge them beyond 6%, 4% is, I would say, the ideal taper to which we can enlarge, we can be conservative also, and it can definitely help in our good hypo irrigation also. Okay, next important thing is that please use a lot of ultrasonics when doing endodontic treatment. Yeah, so ultrasonics is a great tool. Apart from irrigation, I do instrument removal, MTA packing, fiber post removal, metal post removal. So many things are achieved by using ultrasonic. Okay, so please invest your time in ultrasonic. And the last point is please introduce fibers in your post endodontic restorations. Okay. So these are 5 points what I would say would definitely help any beginner or any general dentist in upgrading his endodontic skills.
Okay. I would just like to talk about few topics if you don't mind. So one thing is gutta percha removal while you are treating in a re-endo cases, like, you know, that is a big challenge sometimes. True. Because if you do a great RC, you have packed it so beautifully. Yeah. But now that for any other XYZ reason, there are certain cases that come down and you need to re-enter.
Yeah.
So how can we do that? Like, how can you remove?
So Dr. Jaisal, that's a very excellent question that you have put up. So in earlier days, the use of solvents, even during my PG days, we used to use a lot of solvents to remove gutta percha. But over a period of time, I realized that we are moving to a biomimetic approach where a lot of, you know, bonding materials we are going to use into our tooth after the endodontic treatment has been done.
Yes.
Suppose if some amount of GP solvents, remnants of those GP solvents, if they stay behind in those dentina tubules, then I'm not going to get a good hybrid layer and my composite core is not going to bond effectively to the underlying tooth structure, and then the crown may dislodge or maybe the onlay may dislodge, and so many things can happen. So I have come out with a very dedicated, very repeatable, very predictable protocol of removing gutta percha from the canal. I already have a YouTube video on the same. So in which first we use ultrasonics. So now this is a non-solvent based gutta percha removal. Okay, so first and foremost, we use ultrasonic tips to soften that gutta percha core. Because the first obstacle that we encounter is that GP is so hard. Okay, but moment I apply ultrasonics to gutta percha, it softens. It literally melts like I'm cutting a butter with a hot knife.
Okay.
It is that easy. So first thing that I enter is with my ultrasonic.
Okay.
Second is I'm going to use the retreatment files from different companies to remove the main core of gutta percha. Okay. But there will be some amount of gutta percha which will be sticking to the walls of the canals.
Yeah.
Okay. So the gutta percha and the sealer remnants which are there on the walls of the canal, they are removed with a separate file which has a spiral configuration. I don't want to name the company here. So that is going to remove all the gutta percha from the canal, and it is going to give you a very crisp canal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think that the re-endo that is performed, I mean, how many percentage of the cases have you seen as repeating the root canal, and why multiple reasons there might be, but there are some reasons that you can mention, like why a root canal has to be repeated in certain years?
Most of the time, what I have observed that there is a lot of lack in devotion of time to irrigation. Yeah, this is a major thing that I've seen so many cases where all the canals have been located, gutta percha is well obturated, there is proper core also done with that tooth, everything is fine, but there is a periapical lesion. So lack of proper time that is given to irrigation is something missing here. Okay, so proper time, dedicated time has to be given to irrigation, and you can't skip the irrigation step. One more thing related to irrigation is that using proper materials. You know, we don't want to buy any local cheap materials which are not going to give you that efficacy that we actually want. So please invest your time and in buying and using proper materials. So irrigation is that one factor that everybody misses out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So they should upgrade their irrigation protocol.
Protocol, correct.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Coming to an end to this podcast, it's a never-ending topic, like, true. You know.
Yeah.
But definitely I see that, you know, we'll be shooting a lot of podcasts with you because I'm sure the listeners are going to love it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Doctor, for coming in. Thank you so much for giving your valuable time.
Thank you.
And we come to an end of the podcast. Thank Anything you. That you want to say?
In the end, I just want to say that please be ethical, please be honest, and please do good dentistry. It is definitely slow, but in the long run, it definitely pays off. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Thank you.
Yeah.
Please press like button if you like the video. Share it with your friends. Comment down your views about it or any special requests that you have, and subscribe the channel. Thank you.